Hello, everybody, and welcome into another episode of the Comics Experience Make Comics Podcast, the show where we talk about the nuts and bolts of making comics. I'm Joey Groh, and I'm joined by Comics Experience's Andy Schmidt. Hello, Andy.
Hey, Joey.
How are you doing?
I'm all right.
It's been a couple episodes since you've been on.
Yeah, and the world is still doing what it's doing.
It is still doing what it's doing, and by that, of course, you mean turning. It is still rotating. The other person joining us that hasn't been on in a long time, and I should have looked up the date because I believe the other person on the line at that time was Rob Anderson, and our guest is Bobby Kurnow, who is at IDW Publishing as a writer and editor. And I think it was that long ago that we recorded an episode of the podcast with Rob Anderson, another Comics Experience alum, so a blast from the past.
Yeah, hey, thanks for having me. It's fun to talk to you guys.
Yeah, Bobby, appreciate you coming on. And we were going to talk about a couple things, but first off, I wanted to mention that we're recording the week of San Diego Comic-Con at home, and your book, Ghost Tree, was nominated for multiple Eisners, including Best Limited Series and Best Art and also Best Writer. And that is fantastic. If you haven't read Ghost Tree, you can grab Ghost Tree digitally. At the very least, you can find it on Comixology. But congratulations on that, Bobby. I mentioned it to you off air that it was a great read, and it's one of those that just sucks you in from the top, and you keep going.
I really appreciate that. I really just wrote this for myself, and I didn't really think about how other people would react to it. So it's great to hear you, people like you, say that. It's much appreciated.
Has there been a common response that you've heard from folks who have read it as far as themes go or responding to any particular part of it?
Yeah. It's been very favorable overall, very kind. I think people, it's hard to talk about without giving spoilers. A lot of people were kind of surprised by the ending. I don't know what else to say about that, but without giving it away. I think people we're just kind of surprised. It's a book that's a little bit different than what's out there. I think it's a little bit more focused on human relationships and emotions and growth over time than kind of your more standard superhero fare. So I think folks were just a little surprised by it in a good way.
Right.
But it's hard for me to put myself in someone else's shoes like that. But mostly people thought they told me that they were touched by it and how great the art is, which I can talk freely about how great the art is. Simon Gian, the artist, and Ian Herring and Becca Kinsey on the color. They all, I didn't have to do anything other than what was on the script. They just got it and made it so much better than what was on the page. So,
well, beautiful art, yeah. Beautiful colors for sure. And that was part of, just the overall design. The way the pages worked, just the whole thing was such a nice read. And It was great to read through, and I told my wife, I was like, I've got to make sure I don't just ask him about that comic, because I think I could drill down on it for a while, because I just like so much of what you did as far as setup and payoff. And maybe it's one of those things where, I look at it and go, wow, this is just, it's so nicely told. One more, I guess, question about Ghost Tree specifically, was there any parts that you kind of went back and redrafted or gave you pause or that you had to go and work through?
Yeah. What else? We're kind of obliquely talking about the ending. That ending, I kind of had an entire book in my mind, but and when I started writing it, I was happily married, or so I thought. And around about third issue, things sort of started falling apart. I'm still friends with my ex-wife. Nothing bad or super dramatic happened. It's just we were going in different ways, and so the very ending is influenced by that relationship falling apart. That definitely was not the very ending was different than how originally intended, but real life kind of got in the way, and I was like, okay, I think this will be at least be more true to my experience. And I thought it fit for the story, how things kind of change up at the end. So,
how aware of that influence were you at the time? I'm asking because I had a similar thing happen when I was writing 5 Days to Die. It wasn't around my marriage, but I became a father for the first time when I was you know, shortly before, and I was like, I think I was writing the fourth of the five issues of 5 Days to Die when it dawned on me, like, oh my gosh, this whole thing. I mean, it's like a crime thriller thing, but like, it occurred to me that, oh, this whole thing is completely about me dealing with fatherhood.
Yeah. Like not aware. You know, I don't like writing. That might sound weird to say, but it's not a pleasurable process. And so I just kind of write stuff that I can't not write about, that things that won't get out of my head until I get them on paper. And I never know what I'm writing about in terms of its meaning or theme or whatever you want to call it, until after it's done, usually a couple months after it's done. Then I can kind of be like, okay. And so, you know, the story of Ghost Tree is about a guy who's unhappy in his marriage, and it's always been that way. Even when I started writing it, when I was happy in my marriage, or so I thought. So when I've wondered how much was playing in my subconscious. They're like, okay, right. Because a lot of, you know, I was just kind of going along and going through life, and it wasn't until I sort of like was looking back and being like, okay, there's some things wrong here. You know, so I was definitely kind of either not being completely honest with myself or not, you know, seeing what was going on in front of in my life, but maybe my subconscious was picking up on it. But you know, so the book is definitely, about, not being able to leave the past behind and not looking at what's going on in the present. So I think that definitely had real life, relevance to me, but I definitely didn't realize it until it was all said and done.
Yeah, that's similar to my experience, and not just with the one series I wrote, but like whenever I'm writing something, it is often after the fact. And like you said, it's weeks or months sometimes after the fact. You're like, oh, you know what? I was dealing with this thing, and that was writing. That was you know, whether it's therapeutic or it was just on my mind. But yeah, I'm always fascinated by how what's going on in our lives is influencing either overtly or subtly, you know, what we're doing. I think it's one of the ways that creative people tend to stay creative.
Absolutely. I mean, I wish that we could normalize just creating for creation's sake, because it is therapeutic. It does help you work through what's going on in your own life. I wish people would make comics and write, not with the promise of getting published or something else down the line, just to do it for themselves. I think it's really important. Yeah, just everything you're saying is absolutely right.
Yeah. So one of the things that, you know, I'd like to echo what Joey was saying about congratulations on the Eisner noms, on having another really great, book come out. We were talking a little bit about sort of community and that sort of stuff. And now you and I have known each other for, let's see, going back to 2007. Does that sound about right?
Yeah, that sounds right. I'm mid aughts or mid to late aughts. That sounds right. Yeah, I was gonna say 06, but it could very well be 07. Yeah.
Yeah. And we've known each other in a lot of different roles. We've been. Yeah. You had took the comics experience writing class, and then I moved. That was in New York, in person in New York, and then I moved over to San Diego to IDW, and then you came over, and you were an intern for a short time, as I recall, like maybe a couple months.
Yep.
And then we got you on staff, and then your career took off.
You just skyrocketed.
Which has been great, and you've
over
been,
12 years, yeah.
Man, you've been you. I think you've been an editor of comics longer than I edited comics.
that's insane to me. That is insane. Yeah, no, it's I am right. I'm literally right at my 10-year anniversary of being. I started as an intern in January of 10, and then yeah, I was a full time employee about this time 10 years ago. So. It's weird, right. Yeah. And so, you know, Andy, thank you for your compliment there. And I'll just say thank you. You were a large part of, you know, the beginning of my comics career. So thank you for that.
Well, I wanted to bring up, because it cracks me up, that we were actually roommates for a while.
Yeah. I was so kind of going back to my failed marriage. One of the situations was that my wife at the time was, or then she was just my girlfriend or fiance. was doing a PhD in Berkeley, and you know the IDW is in San Diego, so I was doing a crazy commute every week down to San Diego and then back up for weekends, which, you know, spoilers, is not good for a marriage. I bunked with Andy and his family in his spare room. I don't know how that was, like half a year or a few months. I don't remember exactly how long that was.
You were a great guest. You're awesome.
Thanks.
The things we sacrifice for comics. I don't know that we always make the best choices, but we make choices.
I think it's unless you have to make comics, you probably shouldn't. I want to encourage making comics. You know, everyone who's listening, making comics is great, but you got to really want to do it. If you want to do it, it's very rewarding. It's wonderful. But if you're kind of on the fence, then, you know, it's not always easy.
I mean, that's definitely true. And, you know, one of the things that I have found about comics is that the environment, or at least most of the environment, has been very supportive. You know, what I've found is that I've made, the strongest and longest lasting friendships. I've got any number of people that when I'm writing a project or I'm editing a project or I'm thinking about a new, venture within the industry, that I can turn to and I can trust to, give me their honest opinion, but do so in a way that doesn't, if they don't think it's a good idea, do so in a way that doesn't tear me down, but gives me food for thought. Like I've found that the community itself has been one of the better things in my life, I think. And I've had a pretty good life. Like I don't have anything to complain about, but it's been great. And, you've been a big part of that. I mean, yes, you started as a student of mine. That was how we got introduced. But, I think you're one of the things that's really cool for me is that when I meet somebody as a student, that relationship can evolve in so many different ways, where like I don't think of you at all, like it does, like you're the editor at IDW of these cool projects, of on things from My Little Pony and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, create your own projects, like, and that's just awesome, because now you're not Bobby the former student, you're not really Bobby the editor, you're Bobby, you're the friend and somebody that I can trust. And so to me, you are a good example of, and this is true of many other people for me, somebody that I met in one sort of arena or in one dynamic, and it's just naturally evolved into something, something different and something longer lasting. And, I've found that that's been a really cool thing for me. Hopefully you feel that way towards folks. I don't want to be so brazen as to think you would feel that way towards me necessarily, but I definitely do.
And, what comics is it's full of fun, talented weirdos. And so if you are, a fun, talented weirdo or, aspire to be, it's a great place to meet people. And cause like I said before, you have to do this for passion, for love of the medium. You can't be doing it for fame or money, because that's a stupid way to go about getting those things. It's a great way to meet people who share, a fun, unique passion. That's without a doubt, that's the biggest perk of the job, is just meeting cool people who love and create like you do.
Hey everybody, breaking in with a quick production note. Andy actually had to take a phone call and stepped out, so we said our goodbyes, and then I continued the conversation with Bobby. And before I started rolling again, we had just talked about the Comics Experience community, getting to know people in forums and workshops online, and how that translates to getting to see work from other people.
Like, I can't promise I can get anyone a job, but I love to look at things. I love to see new talent. That's one of the best parts of the job. So if I have the bandwidth, I'm always happy to, I've come from Comics Experience. I know, the good stuff that is done there. So, that is a leg up, definitely.
Oh, well, that's good. Especially with San Diego going on, I'm assuming you would have gone, had there not been the coronavirus, the COVID-19, you could have gone to the Eisners and, and enjoyed that ceremony and being around friends and colleagues, but instead it's got to be a little different. Of it's the at-homeizer. It's the at-home San Diego Comic-Con.
Yeah, it is. It's definitely it's definitely super surreal. Yeah, you know, like this year's been terrible. I have no tragedies that befallen me, so I'm extremely lucky. I'm employed. I'm in health. But it still takes a toll. So getting the Eisner nominations like that weekend, I heard on a Monday, I think like June 1st actually. In that weekend, I was just like in the doldrums, you know, not having a fun time. And so yeah. that was a nice pick me up, a really unexpected surprise. The point being is that this year is so weird. Comic-Con should be starting right now. I live in San Diego, so I'm kind of tempted just to go down to the convention center and just walk around and see if there's any tumbleweeds around blowing by.
See which cast member of Lord of the Rings comes out of the elevator. It's the San Diego Comic-Con experience. Yeah, I think I would be too. Well, I guess with all that in mind, you and Andy touched on community and where you came from, and you obviously knew each other through IDW and work. But even just looking at some of the titles that you edit, I don't know if we mentioned you're a group editor at IDW, but you had run the My Little Pony comics for a long time, and sound like you're still involved with those, but not quite as much. And also G.I. Joe, and as well as other things. Are you, I guess this might be a bigger question of, well, where's anybody meeting anybody? Maybe it is just all online. Is that usually a place that you meet folks and get to know them outside of something like a forum like Comics Experience?
I can't say I'm a fan of Twitter, but I do spend time on it. There is, without a doubt, you know, there's pros and cons to Twitter and any social media. And this goes for Instagram too, to a degree. But there is a ton of talent, amazing talent, just available at your fingertips in a way that, you know, wasn't even 10 years ago when I started. I definitely am on the lookout for that, for people posting art. A lot of times a great way to do that is people you're a fan of, maybe say, a big established artist. Sometimes they'll retweet someone you've never heard of, someone who's just getting started that they saw. And I found that's been a great way of finding new talent, is seeing who are the friends of the people established, who are the people that the people who are established are hyping up, are interested in. But also, you know, honestly, like just going to the store and I'll try and at least once a month, pick up a book that I've never heard of before, that I don't know the creative team for, you know, maybe I'm not that familiar with the publisher, just something totally brand new. People who are creating whole complete comics, that's the best. You know, cover art, you'll see posted all the time. That's great to see. But honestly, like sequentials, interiors, how a story plays on the page from page 1 to page 20 or 22, whatever it is. That's the magic. And that's what I always look for. I think for anyone, you know, starting out that might be listening, I think just getting some pages completed, and you don't even need to have it, published. Of course that's a great milestone and forwards your career. But, the first step is just, and it's hard. It's really hard to just get pages done. And I love that, you know, I remember my first class with Andy, we did, I don't know if he still does this probably, doing a 5-page story, right. 5-page story. And I tell the entire story in those 5 pages. That's a great challenge. Start small, start manageable. A lot of people start with these epics in their head and they almost inevitably fall apart. So just getting some stuff done. And if someone showed me a 5-page comic that they put together, I treat that seriously, because that's how I started. And I remember doing that. I remember photocopying in Kinko's my own comics when I was in my 20s I look back now on are terrible, and I would be kind of embarrassed to show anyone. But I'm kind of rambling a little bit, but I actually distinctly remember a formative experience for me, my comic book experience, is I went to a convention and I handed off my handmade Kinko's copied comic to Brian Bendis. And he said, this is great that you got this done. You know, this is really cool that you printed this. It's done. I can look at it. That's a huge accomplishment. And I didn't really realize it was a huge accomplishment. You know, it's just like okay, I spent $45 making 100 copies of this book that me and my friend put together. But that was very encouraging, and I really appreciated that. So I try and pay that forward as much as I can. And, you know, you got to start somewhere, and you shouldn't be ashamed if it's not how you want it to be. No one's first comic is how you want it to be. You got to love it. You got to keep going. You got to fail a bunch.
Right.
You got to make a bunch of crappy comics before you can make a good one. So I'm kind of just going on a spiel here, but
I think it's all good information.
I think it's important.
Yeah. As somebody that this is what you do. You not only write, but you also edit. And I'm sure a lot of the business side is, in addition to the marketing side, it all comes into play at, you know, different percentages of what you have to do as a job. And I think that's the, like you mentioned, the 5-page story is a recurring theme with how Andy sets stuff up, whether that's coloring, whether that's drawing. It's getting that 5 pages out there, because that's a tangible goal of a thing that you can make. And if you are a writer, maybe you can afford to pay an artist for 5 pages, or you can find somebody that's in a similar position to you are career-wise that would love to draw 5 pages with a writer that's going to ship them, you know, 20 copies so they can hand them out or send them to an editor or whatever. So it's a lot of good reasons to do that. My first 5-page comic out, I got a response from a publisher and was shocked. Like, it was one of those, oh, okay, because
right.
it really was what you said, though. It was that eye-opening moment of, oh, I did this work, and now I did the pitch, and they see it. And it sounds so,
yeah.
I don't mean to sound flip about it, but there is some amount of like, oh, no, that's what the thing that I had to do. It took years to get to that point of going, here's my comic, and them going, oh, yeah, well, let's talk about a contract, and me going, what? Because it, for some reason, it seems so, I guess, ethereal that it happens.
Yeah, no, it's easy to think about comic book companies as being these monoliths, and, you know, you put something into it and often you won't hear back. You know, I get unsolicited pitches and I often don't respond back just because I got to tend to whatever I'm doing with at the moment. But often it is just people, it's humans, it's other, like I was saying, fun weirdos working in these companies for the most part, who love comics and want to see new comics and new talent. And so, you know, I know everything that gets submitted, to IDW, and everything that comes to me, I look at. You know, there's things that come into our letters page, which I don't go through all of that. But you know, if it's come to me directly, I take a look at it. And I think a lot of editors, you know, if they're able to, can do that. So yeah, that's an important thing. Everyone's human. Everyone who's working at these companies is human. They might just be. If I can give a little quick piece of advice, is that a lot of people tend to, starting out, people who are really on top of their game and who are trying to actively pitch will learn who's editing at different companies and who the big editors are and working at the big, sort of the big properties. That's really smart. But who's a genius is the starting out creator who does the research and find out who the assistant editors are and tries to contact those people, because those people are just starting out and they're looking for their own roster of talent that they can develop their relationships with. And I know a lot of the artists I'm working with today are people I worked with 10 years ago when I was just starting out. Dave Wachter is a great example. He did the art on the very first book I edited. Then he did the art on my first creator owned. And now he, you know, just recently last fall, he did Ninja Turtles 100.
Oh, wow.
He just consistently showed me that he's talented. He's easy to work with. He is, hits his deadlines great. He's just the whole package. So.
And he was with you on Night of a Thousand Wolves, right? Am I misremembering that?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, that's exactly right. Yeah, that was the first creator owned. So, you know, the point being is that if you're starting out, find your peers, find, you know, other people who maybe are just a step or two above you in kind of being established. And because those people, I guarantee, are going to be hungry for relationships and, you know, forming creative partnerships. And so, yeah, and those can be relationships for a lifetime. So, whereas if you're hitting up the big, you know, Tom Brevoort at Marvel, you know, how many people are pitching him,
right,
that are just much more established and honestly more skilled at their level, 'cause they're more experienced, right?
Sure.
It's not like a inherent skill thing. It could just be, they have been around for longer. So you got a lot more competition, but I guarantee you, you know, an assistant editor, if you search them out and be like, hey, I loved your work on Mighty Morphin Power Rangers miniseries, you know, they will remember that. They will notice that someone noticed them.
Right.
So yeah, I don't know where that tip came from, but it's, that's what I would recommend.
No, I think that's a good recommendation, and it's for all the reasons that you mentioned. If you're somebody that's starting out or doesn't have a lot of books under their belt, then reach out to other folks who are in a similar position, but potentially in a hiring position, and yeah, it just all goes from there. Well, we mentioned G.I. Joe, we mentioned obviously Ghost Tree. Is there anything else you can talk about that you're working on currently?
Not really. I am in active development on a new project, which is it's a bio project. It's a biography of someone. I haven't decided whether it's just going to be inspired by this person or pretty more kind of literal interpretation of their life.
Interesting.
But that's what I'm working on now. It's a little too early to talk about any more detail than that. But I'm enjoying it. I don't often like writing, but I'm actually kind of enjoying this just because it's such a weird person and a weird story.
Excellent.
But yeah, too early to speak about that, but one day hopefully you guys will see that too.
So Ghost Tree, G.I. Joe, those are out, and I think we mentioned Paul Aller, folks have heard on Make Comics before, and is also a Comics Experience alum and instructor, is writing G.I. Joe, and it's, if you haven't read it, I think at least the first trade is out, and it's a very interesting take on G.I. Joe.
Yeah, I think it's really timely. I think it speaks to, the whole premise is that Cobra has won the war and has taken over America, and so G.I. Joe is this program basically, recruiting civilians to fight back through sabotage and, spying. And so it's about everyday people who are kind of taking up this fight against this oppressive regime. So I think that's a timely spin on the mythos of Joe. And I'm really, Paul is someone else who, he just kind of cold called me with a completed comic. I think it was an anthology he had. And I was like, wow, this is cool. You've never worked before professionally, but this is professional work. And I don't know, that was probably 8 years ago, and I'm still working with Paul today. So yeah, he's a good dude.
That's excellent. I believe maybe that was Clockwork, his big,
big, you got that right.
Big collection of 5-page stories. It all comes in a full circle.
Yeah, exactly. I'll just say Ninja Turtles is probably what I spent the most time with today, and what Sophie Campbell is doing in that book is really cool. I'm a huge fan of her. So I hope that's another book I hope people pick out. Oh, and also my favorite comic of all time, I'm now the editor on Usagi Yojimbo from Stan Sakai, and I don't know what to say about that book. It's just every month it's consistent and wonderful. You learn about feudal Japan. You become invested in Usagi and his journeys, and yeah, Stan's my hero, is one of my true heroes. So I've been very lucky to work with him on that.
I miss that news completely. I love Usagi Yojimbo. That's great. That's so fantastic.
Yeah, I came to IDW, I believe last April. We're working on issue 13 right now. So yeah, that sounds about right. So Stan, he's been here for about a year. It's been great.
Oh, fantastic. Well, if you've never picked it up, it's a great time to pick it up. And it's also one of those books that has just a rich history. You can go back and read a lot of Usagi and get in right now with where you guys are. That's terrific.
It's, if you're quarantining, it's a great read because there's 30 years worth of material and you can just plow through it. That'll take up a good, at least a week. I know I'm consuming media very quickly these days, so that should tide over some people for a few days at least.
Samurai Rabbit. It's a lot of Turtle fans seem to know him from the cartoons. That's one of the things I keep reading with the announcement of the new Netflix animated series. So very cool. Yeah. Well, thanks again for your time on this. I appreciate a chance to talk about what you're working on and some of your history. If folks want to find you, good place online. I know you said you're not a huge fan of Twitter, but you're on Twitter.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I'm. You just search Bobby Curno, but my handle is the Disastrix, which I picked before I became I wish I had done something different. I just wish it was my name these days, but it's cool. So yeah, just type in Bobby Curnow and you should find me on Twitter.
Excellent. Well, if you have a question you want to hear talked about on the show, you can email info@comicsexperience.com or you can tweet at Comic Experience on Twitter, and we will talk about it here on the show. So until next time, keep making comics.